Good morning. My name is Tanya, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Update conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now like to turn the call over to John Boozer. Mr. Boozer, you may begin.
Thank you, Tanya, and thanks to everybody who's joined us this morning. I'm here today with Paul Daggett, and we'll be going through the presentation, which you've probably located on our website. So turning to page two, the objective of NBPE, as you know, is to provide the opportunity for capital appreciation and current income. The capital appreciation through the share price growth and the current income through the regular dividend that we pay. We invest directly into private equity-backed companies, and we invest across the capital structure in both equity and debt instruments in the capital structures of those private companies. The portfolio is managed by Neuberger Berman, and it's part of the management of a $55 billion private equity platform. And we've structured NBPE with our direct investing strategy to be very efficient from a cost basis with lower all-in costs than even if many of our investors would invest directly in private equity funds. Turning on to page three, you'll get a brief overview of NBPE's manager, Neuberger Berman. As you can see in the pie chart on the left, both our direct equity and fund businesses are more than $20 billion, and we have other direct credit strategies, which we use in NBPE, and direct specialty strategies as well. In total, a $55 billion platform. And over the last 3 years, we've averaged committing from this platform $7 billion. So we feel like we're kind of at the heart of the ecosystem of private equity to source investments for NBPE. We're global with offices around the world, New York, Dallas, Boston, London, Milan, Hong Kong, and Bogota, that have private equity professionals, along with more than 20 other offices where Neuberger has professionals around the world. If you flip on to page four, a few of our performance highlights. During 2017, the net asset value per share total return was 13.2%, and the share price in pounds rose 11.3%. To the right, our capital position, we have $970 million of private equity fair value, and we have 156% adjusted commitment coverage ratio, or to say we're not overextended in terms of having commitments that we don't have more than enough capital to cover should they all come due at once. On the lower left, cash flows during 2017, you'll see $252.8 million was realized from the investments we made. We reinvested $313.4 million into new investments, along with paying $24.4 million of dividends during the year. And then you see the dividend percentages at the lower right side of the page. On the share price, it's a 3.6% annualized yield and a 2.9% annualized yield on the net asset value. Page five has a lot of summary statistics, and I'll just focus on the right-hand column, which are the audited 12/31 numbers. The 228 numbers not significantly different in that most of our portfolio is marked quarterly, and there hasn't been a remark as of February 28th since the 12/31 audit. You can go down, you see the different investments, income, equity, and legacy fund investments. The legacy fund investment is 107.6, and that portfolio continues to wind itself off, producing pretty decent cash flow for NBPE. You also see we're now up to 113% investment level relative to our capital, and that's because we've been able to make good investments, we feel, and utilize the capital facility to have a little bit excess investments over 100%. Towards the bottom, you'll see the net asset value per share, now $17.45 in dollars and $12.91 in pounds as we ended the year. So if you flip on to page six, looking into the portfolio at a high level, some of the diversification statistics, You'll see we're very much North American focused currently on the weighting of our investments, but we are very open to investments around the world going in the portfolio. And although it'll be a while till we're not fully North American focused, most likely, we certainly could see those other percentages, especially Europe, growing. Company size, we focus in the buyout space, and you see the small and mid-cap buyout space is the largest space, but we're also open to the large-cap investments as well. On the industry, you see we're very diversified there. And then I think one of the most telling parts of this chart is the lower right, which is the vintage year of our underlying investments. And the typical private equity business plan calls for an exit after 4 or 5 years, and the average exit for a private equity company tends to be a little bit closer to 6 years. But if you look at everything from 2013 forward, that's 89% of our portfolio. So everything is still well within the business plans, or 89% is well within the business plans, and a lot of the older investments are investments from our funds that can continue to wind down. Flipping to page 7, we review our net asset development. And you'll see, as you see the three things that cause it to grow, the realized gains are far and away the largest part, some additional value appreciation, and then some yield from our dividend or fixed income portfolio. So all three were contributors towards the accretion this year in the MBPE net asset value. Page 8 covers our financial performance by investment type. Our direct equity investments, we've had a very consistent record of low 20% returns, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years. Our income investments are a little lower than the yields on the investments that we're making, and that's because mostly of mark-to-market write-downs write-downs of some of the carrying values of those investments. And that affects the return. These investments tend to be very thinly traded, and as a result, one trade can make a big difference. You will see as we go on through the portfolio, when you write down an investment, say from 100% to 80%, it lowers your return here, but it also increases your yield to maturity. So given these positions are not in default, it's our expectation that they will result in a higher yield in future years. And then the funds, being in their liquidation mode and being older, they continue to have some positive appreciation, but not a large positive appreciation, which is not atypical of funds as they get older. And then finally, if you go to page 9, we're looking here at the investment activity, how much capital we've invested in the new deals, and how much we've realized from existing transactions during each year. And when you include 2018, from 2015 forward, we've realized $900 million from disposing of investments during that three-year and two-month period. And I think the most important point there is that's about 90% of the size, or even over 90% of the size, of our entire portfolio today. So it just shows how we've been able to make investments, realize those investments, and we're constantly in search for new investments to put in MBPE as the old investments are sold. So I'm going to turn it over at this point for a little bit deeper dive in the portfolio to Paul.
Great. Thank you, John. So on page 10, we give an overview of the direct equity portfolio. Today, this is 73% of total private equity fair value, so has become a very large part of the portfolio. Obviously, the funds have been winding down, returning capital very efficiently, actually, to us over the last couple of years. That has allowed us to focus on either income or equity investments wherever we see the most attractive opportunities. And over the last year in particular, we've seen a lot of attractive opportunities in this area. The portfolio today is 87 direct equity investments with $711 million of fair value. That's from more than 50 different general partners, so we are very diversified, continue to be very well diversified by sponsor. We're also diversified by industry, geography, and vintage year. We have some new statistics on the bottom left of the page, looking at the growth and the valuation metrics for the portfolio as a whole, you'll see that the average revenue growth in the equity portfolio was 2%. EBITDA growth over the last 12 months, as of December the 31st, was 11%. So both very good numbers. These numbers obviously do fluctuate slightly over time, partly because the companies themselves performance fluctuates, but obviously we're also adding and removing companies as we make new investments and divest companies. So I'd say these numbers are broadly in line with our history. The revenue growth is slightly lower. The EBITDA growth is slightly higher. But overall, I'd say we're very pleased with how the portfolio is performing. In terms of valuation and leverage, the valuation multiple for the portfolio is 10.5 times EV to EBITDA. Again, in line with our historic carrying values, actually slightly lower, and also very slightly lower than the new transaction multiples in the private equity market today. And the net debt to EBITDA is 4.5 times. I'll talk about exits on the following pages, but 2017 was a very good year for us for exits. You can see we had 7 full exits, which generated a 4.4 times gross multiple and a 41% IRR. And then on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see the top 10 investments. One point to note, which I mentioned on the last call, but that we have continued with, is we have, where possible, been making slightly larger investments. You can see that several of the new investments from 2017 are $20 million or more. That is a decision we've made during last year that we should be slightly more concentrated. We still want to bring the benefits of diversification and all the other benefits that we believe we bring through our equity investment program. But we do feel that we could be slightly more concentrated in the portfolio. So the top 10 investments today make up 30% of the equity portfolio. You'll see that there are a number of 2017 investments in this top 10. We'll talk about those on the following slides. But here, just to point out again, we are very well diversified by industry, by sponsor, and we are very pleased with the investments we've been making. Final point on this page is that there are a number of public positions. Again, it's something that comes and goes over time as we sell down positions or underlying sponsors sell down. We've also had 2 IPOs during the year, so that brings us to 8% of the total portfolio in MBPE, not just in the direct equity portfolio, being in publics today. So again, that should be the source of future liquidity over hopefully this year and possibly beyond. So moving to slide 11, a little bit more information on realizations, both in 2017 and those so far in 2018. We had 10 exits in 2017. 2 of those were IPOs, so not really full exits, but obviously liquidity events partially, and hopefully a path to future liquidity. We had 1 recapitalization of Vertiv, which we've talked about before. Which is a fairly recent investment that has returned a significant amount of its capital to us already. Then we had 7 M&A exits. 4 of those were to strategic buyers, 3 were to private equity buyers, and overall, across these 10 companies, these companies are either have been sold for or are currently marked at, in aggregate, 3.7 times our money. So it was a very good year in terms of liquidity and the uptick that we saw, and obviously that feeds into that number that John showed you on the value bridge. And so far in 2018, that liquidity has continued. 2 of these were announced at the end of 2017, the Warranty Group, which is being sold to Assurance Financial Services Company, which was announced. We announced it in December. That has now been completed. So 2 exits that are announced in 17 now being completed. And then 1 more, which was announced in March of 2018 in Promark, which is a packaging company that has been sold to Leonard Green and Partners. So a good start as well to 2018 in terms of liquidity. Moving on to 12 and looking at on the left our gross multiple over time. Obviously 2017 was a particularly good year, as you can see, with 4.4 times. 2 times has been closer to our historic average. We'll see how 2018 pans out. In terms of the uplift that we see on exits on the right, you can see that three quarters prior to those exits being announced, over 2015, 16, and 17, we had almost a 40% uplift from the carrying value, which was 24% two quarters prior, 18% one quarter prior. And again, that just gives you an idea that at least over the last 3 years in those announced exits, our valuations have been very conservative. So moving on to 13 and new equity investments, and you know, I think it's obviously been a very busy year for us, and there's been a lot of media and a lot of talk about the amount of capital in the market and prices being high, and we'll talk a bit more about the market in a couple of slides. We would agree with all of those points. But having said that, we believe the strength of our platform has been growing. We've been seeing increasingly interesting deal flow. And in 2017, we made 20 new investments. They're laid out on pages 13 and 14. They fall into a number of different themes, and I won't cover each one. I'll just give you some idea of the type of investments we're looking to underwrite. And so the themes are, first of all, companies that may have, or we hope have, secular growth stories behind them. Examples of that would be the First MHS on the second line, which is a company that makes package handling systems used by UPS, FedEx, Amazon. So obviously the secular growth story there is offline to online retail. Then there's companies in the technology industry like Excedion that you see down four rows down. There are companies in the healthcare industry like the FV Hospital deal, which is a Vietnamese hospital business. Bylight Technology at the bottom of the page also falls into that theme in the technology space. And then on the page 14, there's a number of secular growth stories like Branded Cities, which is a digital advertising business, or Excelitas, which makes sensors, optics, and illumination technology, so is an industrial technology business that we believe has secular growth drivers. Another theme is non-cyclical businesses, or businesses we believe will have a low cyclicality, and obviously at this point in the cycle, that could be extremely important. And so examples of that are USI, which is an insurance brokerage business on the top line. On the next page, on page 14, OB Hospitalist, which is OBGYN, essentially outsourced physician business, obviously shouldn't be a cyclical business. Two more infrastructure-like businesses in Telexius and QPark. Telexius makes telecommunications infrastructure. It owns towers and subsea cables. Was a spin-out from a large European telecoms operator. QPark is a European parking services provider. So again, both should be relatively non-cyclical. And then the third theme is more of a operational turnaround, very heavy involvement from very good sponsors. And we have a number of examples of that. The most noticeable, I think, would be Staples on page 14, which was a large public to private that we co-underwrote with Sycamore Partners. West Marine is a similar story on a smaller scale, and they're a retailer of boat supplies. So a number of those where we feel that we're buying companies at very reasonable prices with sponsors with proven track records in those types of turnaround situations. And really those are the types of investments that we found from across the platform where we feel that even in a highly competitive market, we found a lot of different pockets of really interesting transactions. So those are the investments in 2017. In 2018, on page 15, to date, we've only done two investments, which are about $10 million. So these are slightly smaller. Avantor is a business we actually have an investment already on the debt side. So this is a different security on the equity side that we feel is complementary to the debt investment we already have. And then we have a European healthcare services company that we are unable to disclose the identity of. But again, I think they both fit that theme, or one of those themes that I mentioned on the last page. I'll say that we have been a little bit slower. Obviously, partly that is because we are at a investment level where we're reasonably comfortable at this point in time. We are still seeing a lot of interesting opportunities, and we do think we'll be able to continue to make interesting transactions throughout the year, particularly as we hopefully see more liquidity coming from the portfolio. Moving on to page 16, and really this page is intended to build on a point that we were very busy on equity investments during 2017 and 2016. And we want to really illustrate how the marks in our portfolio and the equity portfolio look over time. So this is the remaining investments in the portfolio by vintage year of investment. And you can see that there isn't very much left from before 2012, which in itself I think is a good point, that we've managed to pick investments that have a reasonably short life and bring those to realizations, as you'll have seen on those prior slides. 2013 is marked up to 2.6 times. That is driven by a number of public investments in that year. Equally in 2014, we have, as you can see in blue, a reasonable piece of publics in there, and the portfolio as a whole in 2014 investments is marked at 1.7. But beyond that, in 2015, 16, 17, you can see our marks are 1.4, 1.5, and then almost at cost at 1.1 in 2017. And the point that I am trying to make here is that private equity investments very often will take 2 or 3 years to really see the operational value out of the private equity fund coming through. Obviously, that's one of the advantages of being in the private market, that you can do things a little bit more slowly with the medium term in mind in terms of actually seeing the results. And so very often it does take some time for those investments to create value. 2015 investments should really be moving into that window over the next year where they've been held long enough that we should hopefully see more value driven from those investments. 16 is fairly young, 17 obviously is very young. But we feel we've got a very well balanced portfolio with older investments from 13, 14, 15 moving into a window where in a market, you know, if we assume this market continues throughout this year, then we would hope to see liquidity coming from those 3 years. And then in 16 and 17, places where we have good GPs driving what we think are very executable plans for those companies for future years of value increases, we hope. So that's really how we look at the equity portfolio as a whole. So moving on just quickly to the market on page 17, this is a slide we show you on a regular basis, and really the point is, first of all, that public markets have really gone up in value a lot more than private equity markets have since 2011. The U.S. public and the European public markets are up about 50% based on these numbers, just in terms of EV to EBITDA, whereas private equity markets, both in the U.S. and Europe, are up about 20% in terms of the multiples paid for these investments. So valuations certainly are up, but they're not up nearly as much as the public markets. And, you know, in that, we think there is a relative value trade there where the private markets are still at a reasonable value and still at a large discount to public markets in the U.S., which is, as John mentioned, where most of our portfolio is. So turning to the income portfolio on page 18, the income portfolio is an area where, again, we, I think, have talked about quite a bit over the last year. We have been somewhat less active, especially relative to our equity portfolio. That is not something which people should be concerned about in terms of support for the dividend. We'll get to that. But really, the important message that we always have with MBPE is that we never feel under pressure to invest on an absolute basis anywhere or on a relative basis between different investment classes in order to meet a goal. And so the reason that we've invested more in equity than income over the past year is simply that we've seen better opportunities across our platform to be able to do that, and that is exactly what is reflected in the portfolio. The income portfolio we do have, we're very happy with. This is the corporate income portfolio, so it does exclude the secondary acquisitions that we do, simply because disclosing those obviously could be a competitive disadvantage to us. So we do keep those identities withheld. But on the primary issuance, you can see that some of the names on the right, again, these are performing credits with cash yields in the tens, mostly in the tens to mid-tens, and are all performing. They're in asset-light companies with market-leading positions, good equity cushions, strong EBITDA margins. And overall, as I mentioned, we really do feel very good about this portfolio, particularly because it is mostly floating rate debt. It does support still 60% of the dividend. So while that coverage has come down significantly over time, you know, it's still a significant piece of the dividend coverage. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. On 19 is the new income investments that we made during 2017. So we did make $78 million of investments in income investments. You can see the yields down the side. I would say they have come down slightly, which obviously feeds into that story of the relative value opportunities that we've seen across the platform, where we're really underwriting these investments anywhere from L plus 6.5 to L plus 9.25. That has been a little bit higher historically. Obviously, LIBOR itself was a little bit lower historically, so the two offset slightly. But again, relative to other opportunities, I think there's still a lot of capital chasing these, and we've been careful with where we make our investments. In terms of the types of investments, these are generally in companies where we do see a very steady revenue base in those companies, either contractually, in the case of some of the software businesses, or in the case, for example, of Carestream Dental, in a market which, again, tends to be relatively non-cyclical, same with OB Hospitalist and some of the others. So once again, in types of companies where we see very strong revenue bases and generally low cyclicality. Moving on to the overall performance of the vehicle on page 20, this looks at the net asset value total return and the share price total return. Really, the relevant currencies, I think, in the NAV line is US dollars, since most of the assets are in dollars. In share price, clearly we're traded in both, but the London Stock Exchange listing is in sterling. So I think a lot of the investors on this call likely are UK-based and more interested in the sterling values. But in 2017, you'll see the NAV increase by 13.2%. So we're very pleased with that number. We think the portfolio performed well, both on a realized and the remaining portfolio, and are happy with that performance over all of these time periods. Share price over 2017 did increase fairly nicely, but 11% in sterling terms, which is 22% in dollar terms. But if you look at February LTM, then the sterling price is back to where it was, which again is a disappointment to us, and I'll talk about that and the discounts in a couple of slides. Overall, though, I'd say that the NAV increase over all of these time periods has been very good. The share price increase doesn't always keep up with it on a, you know, the exact time basis, but overall the shares obviously have increased over the 5-year, 3-year and 1-year time periods. Moving on to dividends and capital position, and I've covered some of these points, and as has John, but on page 21, first of all, the dividend, we paid our most recent dividend in February. We've held it steady. An annualized dividend of 50 cents. The coverage from the income portfolio is at 58%, but in terms of overall coverage from realizations, you can see we're more than 10 times covered based on the total distributions that we saw in our portfolio. So we feel that it's a very secure dividend. We've been very careful about when we've increased it, always with the mindset that we don't want to ever think about decreasing it. So once again, to reinforce that message, we're not basing our dividend policy on our income portfolio. And although it's not 100% covered, we do feel that it's very securely covered by all of the realization activity, as well as that yield we do see from the income portfolio. And then in terms of capital coverage, We have about $100 million of cash and available credit facility and an adjusted commitment coverage ratio of 156%. So again, we feel that we're very well positioned really for any type of market that might come our way. And then 22, just to talk about the discount and the relative movements of the share price and the NAV over the last year. The discount has moved out again over the last couple of months, which is not unique to us. That is something we've seen from many of our peers over the last couple of months. But, you know, I'd say having done everything we have done over the last year, from the premium listing, the all of the changes we made to corporate governance and structure in the first half of last year, as well as the NAV performance of the year, I'd say that, you know, we're disappointed to be in the discount range and in the 20s again. You know, I think that the market piece is difficult for us to overcome on our own, but in terms of performance and long-term performance, medium and short-term, it's a frustrating feature to see that discount today. You know, we will continue to work on the performance of the fund. There are a few other things we are currently considering in terms of trying to narrow that discount, but that is where we are today. And, you know, ultimately, as I've said, we feel that the portfolio is really well positioned, the performance has been good, and we are doing everything we can to narrow that discount through those two things. And that moves us to page 23, which is really a summary. I mentioned the performance, 13% NAV growth, the total return NAV growth during the year, a very attractive dividend yield of 3.6% on the share price, which is well covered by income and realizations. The capital structure, commitment coverage are very strong, so the balance sheet, I think, is in a good place. And again, a message we have tried to reinforce over time and is becoming increasingly true is that our fee structure, relative to many of our peers, is very attractive because most, nearly all, of the co-investments that we do come with a single layer of fees, which is the layer of fees you see at the NBPE level. Today, that's more than 70% of the portfolio. So once again, on a complete look-through basis, our fee structure is certainly one of the most attractive in the listed funds market, which we think, once again, makes it a very attractive proposition for investing in private equity in the public markets. And across all of those things, we feel very good about where MBP is positioned, its prospects for 2018. Obviously, the one question mark is the overall market and economy, which is always difficult for us to come to a better answer than any of you on the call. But we can say that the portfolio, we think, is well positioned and that our capital structure is well positioned. And finally, that new investments we're looking at, we are very much looking at through the lens of they should be able to withstand an economic downturn as and when that comes. And so that's a lens we've been looking at investments through really for the last couple of years. And that's exactly why we feel that the portfolio is well positioned for any kind of market that might come our way realistically. And really with that completes the prepared presentation. And we'd be happy to take any questions that anyone on the call may have.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad at this time. Again, if you have a question, please press star, then the number one. Your first question comes from Matt Jose with Jefferies.
Hi there. The healthcare credit program is now largely funded. Are you planning on making any additional commitments there?
We don't have a current plan to make any additional commitments there, but that's not to say that we won't in the future. So when it we may reinvigorate it in the future.
And I'd say we've been considering a number of things around the credit space, which obviously the core of this portfolio is in corporate private debt, but we do look and consider other things and you know, look to be innovative and to bring ideas to the portfolio, particularly given that the pace of investment in that particular income portfolio has been slower. So there may be other things in addition that we consider over the year, but there's nothing immediately forthcoming.
That's useful. Thanks.
Your next question is from Ian Scollard with Stifel.
Hi there. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about leverage strategy. I see net leverage has gone up from 13% at the end of December to 16% at the end of March. And what sort of level are the boards comfortable with in terms of an upper limit?
So, I mean, at the moment, we're, as you say, we're 116% invested. I think that we're entirely comfortable where we are simply because, as I mentioned, we have 100 million of available liquidity at this current area. You know, I think as we think about it, 115 to 120% is a good range to be in. There is also always a debate about you know, what the upper limit should be and how much cushion you should have aside for making new investments where investments that you feel are particularly attractive come along, you know, to always have capacity to be participating. So it is something we frequently debate, and I think as a steady state, that 115 to 120% range is really where we would like to be. A little bit higher, we could still be comfortable, but that would be more, you know, if it was more in the 120 to 125% range, likely that would be more of something we wouldn't feel is a steady state goal, more something where we might make some investments knowing that we had some realizations coming through, et cetera. So really the answer, I think, is 115 to 120% is where we feel very comfortable.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question is from Louis Margolis with Select Advisors.
Good morning. I've been in regular investor and buyer of the stock for literally 10 years. You've done a great job. You've done all kinds of things to try to reduce the dividend, with the singular exception in the last half a dozen years of buying the stock. Have you considered something like buying the stock when there's a 15% or greater discount, 20% or greater discount? Is there a discount at which you would say we have to buy the stock? If it goes to a 30% discount, might you step up?
So the board discusses all the mechanisms, including share buybacks, to help eliminate the discount. Our past history in doing share buybacks is their impact appeared to us to be very, very temporary. So as a way to eliminate the discount, we didn't feel they were effective. As a good purchase, we felt those buybacks were effective. So there is some price, and the board has not set that price, that, you know, we would very seriously consider buying some shares, taking into account what our cash position is.
I don't think there have been any purchases since the stock's $7 or $8.
Is that right? That is correct.
Well, that's about the only thing you haven't done. It would seem to me it would be appropriate to consider that.
Yeah, we do consider that.
If nothing's been done, if it's traded at more than 20% discounts numerous times in the last 6 years, you obviously you're not considering it terribly much.
Well, I guess back to my first part of the answer is when we purchased before, we didn't feel it was really affecting the discount more so than just a short period when we were making those purchases. And so it's a question of whether to make those purchases with those shares, make those purchases shares with our capital or continue to make investments. And by the way, and to pay a dividend. So on balance, we've chosen not to go back to the strategy of share repurchases.
I take my dividends, and by the way, I bought stock as recently as last week, and I bought it at every integer since the low single digit. What I do is I take my dividends and wait till it goes to a discount and then repurchase, as opposed to taking it every twice a year. This has been an issue that I've talked to people about for years. And I just think it should be something that should be put on. If you established we're going to buy stock, not unlimited amounts, we're going to buy stock when it's greater than a 15% discount, I suspect you'll start to see the thing get up to a 15% discount and possibly above that. Thank you very much. You guys done a good job. I'm a happy shareholder. Thank you.
We thank you for your long participation and your comments, and those will be discussed in detail at the board next time we meet.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, on behalf of Paul Langston and myself, thanks to everybody for being shareholders of NBPE and for joining in the call this morning.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.